The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org. September's federal election resulted in almost no change to the House. But the election campaign did see, for the first time, all the major parties promising to help with the housing crisis gripping every major city in the country. And last month saw a new Minister of Housing, Ahmed Hussein. Marika Albert is the policy director for the BC Nonprofit Housing Association. Recently, I spoke with her about housing, September's election, and the recent Affordable Housing Conference. Hello, Marika Albert, and welcome back to The Pulse.
Thank you so much, James. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's certainly our pleasure. It's always good to talk with you. Now, when we did last speak, that was just before the September federal election, which, as I recall, ended up not changing a heck of a lot of anything.
No.
But with that said, you know, can you give us your thoughts of, you know, what did you think about the outcome of the election?
Well, like you said, you know, we didn't see a lot of change, and we expected that. We, you know, just given kind of what was going on across the country and what was happening in the ledge, and just, you know, general kind of feeling the folks, the electorate. You know, we figured that there wasn't going to be a lot of change, and there wasn't. One of the significant things for us, though, well, there's two. One is that this was one of the first elections we've seen where housing was actually an issue at the forefront of the conversation, of the conversation leading into the election. And, you know, lip service has, you know, political parties have played lip service to housing in previous federal elections, but nothing very significant. We really saw housing at the forefront of this, and that was very encouraging for us because we actually had folks, not just the political parties, but we also had folks from the electorate, advocates, really talking about, and the media also really focusing in on the different parties' positions on housing and how to address housing affordability in the country. So we were quite happy to see that, and we're hoping to build on that momentum, you know, for our upcoming municipal elections in the province next year, and then, you know, further on to the next provincial election and so on and so on, right? So we really want to keep that momentum because we need to really pressure our levels of government to address this. So that was encouraging for us. The other piece was that we now have a federal minister responsible for housing. Now, his portfolio is housing, inclusion and diversity, which we've never seen before. We've never seen that specific title or portfolio for a federal minister, so we're encouraged by that. We're hoping that with that portfolio created, that we'll see more of an intersectional lens brought into the housing discussion. We know that the National Housing Strategy really doesn't address the challenges facing urban, rural, and Indigenous folks who are living off nation, and the Canadian Housing and Renewal Association and their Indigenous caucus has been really pushing for that, and BCNPHA is a member of that caucus, and also as a member of the Canadian Housing and Renewal Association, have been very supportive of that. So we're hoping that this new ministry minister's portfolio will see more of that actually being integrated into their response to addressing the housing crisis in the country. One of the things that, you know, the proof will be in the pudding when we see the mandate letters coming out. They haven't been out yet. We're hoping, hopefully, by next week. There was a speech from the throne, made some comments around housing, but really, it's only until we really see the mandate letter and then how that's operationalized by CMHC in particular is where we'll see what this election really brought for us in terms of housing and housing affordability.
And that new minister, that's Ahmed Hussein, I think Ahmed. Is how you say his, yes. And
yes,
I that's saw correct. An article about him on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Right. He sounds very enthusiastic, but
yes.
Frankly, what I was reading, you know, sounded kind of vague.
Yes.
Is that sort of your assessment, or we're still hoping for good stuff from him?
Well, I mean, he is vague. I think, you know, one of the things that we are watching is possibly a shift away from the National Housing Strategy as having an actual strategy and approaching, the housing crisis in a more piecemeal way. And I think that they're perhaps a bit reluctant to actually say that out loud at this point. They've created a fund for municipalities to be able to, kind of solve their own housing crisis in not so many words. And I think that really, on the one hand, you know, it's great that, you know, communities can really dictate how they want to, where the needs are in their communities in terms of housing affordability. But what does that mean in terms of an overall strategy? Like, the housing system isn't just in a local area. It is like our whole system, our whole country is a part of it. So there needs to be more kind of like bold action from the federal government in investment and not put all of the responsibility on just municipal governments. And I mean, some are poised to do it more effectively than others, like Toronto and Vancouver, for instance, but it leaves the other municipalities behind. And I also have to say, James, that, we haven't seen a lot of federal investment in British Columbia. We've seen some, but very small percentage of, you know, the overall budget connected to the National Housing Strategy has gone to building affordable housing in British Columbia. There was a huge uptake on the fund to build rental housing, which was great. And it was for market, but some nonprofit housing providers were able to access that fund too. But any other funds have been slow coming. And, we have members that are seriously considering not even applying to CMHC because it's just so arduous. And there's a lot of burden on them, and they don't feel like they're going to be successful. So, yeah, it's they're being very vague right now, and we're not sure. I mean, cynically, we're like, okay, you don't want to really commit to anything at this point, but we'll see.
Now, when we spoke last a couple of months ago before the election, specifically, we were speaking about the Nonprofit Housing Association's Vote Housing campaign. I wonder if you can sort of give us a summary of how you think that program went.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So we were participating in the Vote Housing campaign as a partner, and it was a, you know, federal level campaign run, led by the Canadian Housing and Renewal Association and the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness, and then other provincial associations like ours. And I think all in all, that campaign was important in mobilizing the electorate. I'm not sure how effective it was at influencing the parties themselves in terms of their own platforms, but I think in places like Toronto, where there was more folks on the ground as part of that campaign, and Ottawa, I think that they saw a lot of uptake and a lot of I think that they, you know, our partners felt that was quite effective in terms of really mobilizing voters to think about housing when they went to the polls. And in BC, it was not as we didn't get the same type of uptake in the campaign itself. I thought they ran a great social media campaign, and they were able to leverage certain incidents that were happening, particularly around decampments in Toronto. But again, that campaign, while it really helped bring housing to the forefront, it really felt a bit like it was focused more on Ontario and Quebec. But we did have some volunteers from BC, and we had some, we did get a lot of good social media pickup. So, these are always the challenges with national campaigns and national strategies, and being in the most Western province, is that, you know, I don't generally like to invoke the term Western alienation, but there is a disconnect, right? And there's, you know, we can't really ignore that. So, you know, we see that reflected in these types of campaigns, but also just in how the federal government responds to issues happening in the province as well. So all in all, I'd say a bit of a mixed review on the success of the Vote Housing campaign in terms of how it applied in British Columbia. But certainly, I think it really was effective in mobilizing electors on the ground in like Ontario and other provinces. And it did help. We did get some really good media pickup. So at the national level in particular. So I think it did. It was able to, you know, maintain housing at the forefront during the campaign and RIP period. So, yeah, I would say mixed review.
But it certainly sounds like a campaign that's worth continuing and mounting again for the next federal election and the provincial elections and make sure that housing stays on the forefront. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, James. Yeah, I mean, we really need to. I think we've built this momentum now and we need to keep it going. So it's definitely, you know, we learned from this campaign that we have to, you know, we have to do two things. We have to mobilize the electorate. And we also need to influence the parties and their platforms, which is a bit more difficult in some regards, right? So we're going to really take a deep look at our approach to our municipal campaigns. I mean, we're a nonpartisan organization, and but we do run education campaigns during, you know, local governments, provincial and federal government, federal elections. So we're going to take a deep look at that and see if there's ways that we can apply some of the techniques that were used to help mobilize the electorate, and particularly during the municipal elections. Municipalities play a very important role in the development of affordable and nonprofit housing. So we really want supporters to get out there and vote for councils and that also support, you know, the development of nonprofit housing.
Now, thinking of nonprofit housing, I know that just last week there was the 2021 Housing Central Housing Conference.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that. What happened and how you think it went?
Yeah, well, it was our second virtual Housing Central Conference. We had over 1,000 attendees or registrants, which was quite remarkable, we think, you know, having an online virtual conference experience. We had both, we had the federal housing minister and our provincial housing minister responsible for housing, you know, David Eby, speak. And what was really kind of exciting for us was that, you know, Eby, in his talk in the morning on the opening day, he really kind of called out municipalities and said, you know, we can't build without your support. And if you, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, we need you to step up to the plate, and if you're not, then, you know, you're not, you know, essentially you're not going to get supports, you're not going to get any goodies. And, you know, it caused quite a ripple. UBCM published a response demanding, you know, what he meant by those comments. And although, you know, we are not implicated in that, you know, the BCMPHA and the Aboriginal Housing Management Association and the Co-op Federation, you know, all of us are presenting partners. We're not implicated in it. But what was fantastic was that this was brought up at our conference. And it really, you know, he actually was speaking to our members, and our members really know that there's not all municipalities are supportive of them building housing in their jurisdictions. So that was an exciting moment for us, I have to say. And then we had some excellent keynote speakers. Carol Ann Hilton, who is the founder of the Indigenomics Institute, spoke about reconciliation and economic development for First Nations and the relationship between economic development and housing for First Nations. We had her and Margaret Foe, who's the CEO of the Aboriginal Housing Management Association, had an incredible, what we call a thought leaders dialogue, where the two of them sit and had a conversation and explored, you know, what does Carol Ann's kind of perspective on this increasing or this rising kind of indigenous economy, and how that relates to housing and economic development and economic self-determination for indigenous communities across the country. It was a fascinating conversation. And then we had a couple of other keynotes focused on accessibility and housing and mental health, and also the climate crisis and housing, and how we can support and focus on building more sustainable buildings, but also looking at kind of climate poverty and what does it mean for folks, you know, living in low-income housing, and how the climate crisis is impacting them. It was really interesting. So our keynote speakers were stimulating and thought-provoking, and, you know, it's not the same as like people being able to go up to a mic and ask questions from the audience, or people were writing in the chat and saying how, you know, asking. It was a really great, robust debate. I think overall folks miss having those conversations face-to-face. So we're really hoping that next year, our fingers are crossed, that we'll be able to gather in person again for the Housing Central Conference. We also offered like 55 education sessions for our members on topics ranging from the very dry and informative session on the Societies Act, all the way to how do you diversify your board, looking at governance. Also, we had a very thought-provoking session on the human rights and decampment. So we don't always just have... we'll be trying and do a nice diversity of kind of education sessions, going from very practical sessions where you're learning like kind of practical skills to more kind of philosophical or policy level discussions that impact the provision of housing in our communities. So we have a nice range, we had our Indigenous Caucus this year was great, and we'll be reconvening it again. I don't want to steal their thunder, but just to say that the Aboriginal Housing Management Association will be releasing a strategy in the next few months that is going to be a historic moment. So I don't want to steal their thunder. They're going to do a bunch of work around that, but I just wanted to mention that they're going to be doing that soon, and it's going to be fantastic. So there was a lot of firsts at our conference, and a lot of a lot of really great conversation. I think overall, for a virtual conference, our attendees learned a lot. And we're, like I said, we're really hoping for in-person in 2022.
Yes, and in-person also allows for hanging out at the hotel bar at the end of the day, too, and drinking till 2 o'clock in the morning or something. But
I don't know what you're talking about, James.
No, of course not. I don't know if I'll edit that part out or not, but
yeah, that's okay. I don't mind.
Anyway, I'd also like to spend a minute or two talking about the recent pretty devastating floods and landslides that have happened in southern BC over the past week or so, week or two. Do you know of any of the, you know, community housing locations or social housing that's been affected by the flooding or landslides?
I don't know of any specific providers at this point, but I do know that, a couple of my colleagues have had conversations with some of our members in Chilliwack, for instance, who were very concerned about rising water levels. And also, we have housing providers in Merritt as well, and the entire city was evacuated. So we haven't heard from them yet. We're also kind of trying to give them some space just to kind of deal with the crisis at hand. So we're vigilant right now. We're trying to be on standby to support our members as needed. I don't have any specifics at this point, but most certainly nonprofit housing providers were impacted, absolutely. Just going back to the conference for a second, we were supposed to have a session put on by emergency response team from BC Housing, and they on the Tuesday, and they had to cancel their session because they were actually going to respond to an emergency. So so we know that housing providers are being impacted. And, you know, we really quite devastating for everyone involved. And we're particularly concerned about, you know, transition houses, women and children fleeing violence, low-income seniors, you know, and low-income families. But, you know, our most vulnerable in our communities are going to feel the impact of this even more profoundly. If that's even possible. So yeah, we're staying tuned. We're keeping an eye on the situation and ready to talk to BC Housing about how they can continue to support our members. So that's all I can really say about it at this point. Yeah, I can let you know at a further date if anything else comes up. Yeah.
Further dates in mind, I'm wondering what's on the plates at the Nonprofit Housing Association. You know, what are you looking at over the next 6 months or a year? And as I fish for a reason to get you back on the show.
Excellent. So we're really excited. The census that just happened this year, we'll be getting some new census data on housing being released next fall. And with those new data, we're going to be updating the Canadian Rental Housing Index. So we'll get a more up-to-date view of what's happening for renters across the country. So we're really, you know, right now we're feeling it kind of anecdotally. We have some data sources here and there, but this will give us a very good sense of what's happening. And what's interesting about these data is that they were collected during a pandemic, which I can't recall if we did a census during the last pandemic in Canada during the Spanish flu. I don't think we did. So anyway, this will be very telling for us around where we needed to direct investment in terms of addressing housing affordability. So that's exciting. We're going to be updating our affordable housing plan for BC. These are both available. Links to these two items are available on our website, www.bcnpha.ca. And we've also just obtained some data from the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation looking at nonprofit housing starts and completions in communities across BC. And although we've just done a preliminary analysis and we're not ready to release anything quite yet, I can say that it is dismal. We are not seeing the development of nonprofit housing happening at the pace that we need it to be to address the lack of housing and a lack of affordable housing in our communities. So stay tuned for that. We'll be releasing that in the next few months. And again, we'll be probably using that for our municipal campaign, but I'd love to come back and talk to you more about our municipal campaign once we launch that, James. It would be really great.
Well, I'm pretty sure we will have you back for all those and more. In the meantime, it was great to speak with you again, Marika Albert, and thanks very much for joining us here on The Pulse.
You too, James. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Marika Albert, Policy Director for the BC Nonprofit Housing Association. You can follow the association on Twitter at BCNPHA, and their website is bcnpha.ca. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.